7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 233 of Color of Magic, a Magic Gaming podcast where we talk about all types of issues that affect gamers at and away from their gaming tables and computers. As always, I am your host, Power Dragon, and for 233 episodes, still got my main man riding shotgun, Brian Allen. Brian Sionic, how's it going, man?
Doing great. By the time y'all see this or see and hear this, gotta remember both of those. It'll be baseball will have opened. Rangers are going to be in defense of their first ever world title, which is wild. I did not think I would possibly ever see that, and it's happening.
Man, anything's possible. I think that's why when we watch sports, we literally can say anything's possible in sports. Like, we've seen some crazy things.
You told me 20 years ago I'd live to see both the Rangers and a Cubs title, I'd have told you you were high.
Well, the Cubs were supposedly cursed, so, you know, they weren't supposed to win one.
Right.
But yeah, as always, if you are wanting to support the show, we have a few ways. We are talking to some sponsors, but hey, if you got some products you want supported, events coming up, you want to get some extra eyeballs or ears on, let us know. Shoot us a message. You can shoot us, get us over on the Twitter machine or X, if you call it that now. Or you can, you know, shoot me a message directly. I'm available everywhere. But you can also go to patreon.com/colormagic and you get a shout out just like Brayden Greenlee's. How's it going, buddy? Thank you so much for being a patron. And, you know, you could support us that way too. So we really, really appreciate it. Also, typically, if you're listening to this, remember to leave a review, leave a comment, give it the 5 stars, share it around. That helps more than anything. Even if you can't support us financially, share it on different websites, different feeds, groups, whatever you're in, where you think somebody might find us interesting. But let's get into our lead story here for a second, which I think is going to get some players upset when I say these words. But I think players really want power creep. And I know that's like a controversial thing, but it's come up multiple times before where when we have cards that aren't as, we'll call them obviously exciting, right? Over the top, you know, better stats than their cost, stuff like that. Those get people all worked up and excited and people are talking about them. And there's all these discussions on Twitter and everybody's making YouTube videos. But then we get sets where there's a bunch of good cards, but there's nothing super crazy, nothing that's obviously big that you have to shove into some decks immediately. Those tend to be the ones that don't get as much hype and that people don't talk about as much and they don't sell as well. And even comparing Karlov Manor to Thunder Junction, and both sets have different things people complain about. Like, we've mentioned it before about the theme and the location and stuff not necessarily being the right thing for Karlov Manor potentially. But there are a lot of useful cards, but nothing that's crazy. But even using that set as an example, it took a Pro Tour event to happen to take one of the mythics from being like $5 to $25 over a weekend, right? But before, everybody's like, oh, this card's okay, blah, whatever. But then, as soon as somebody showed them, like, oh no, here's the potential of the card, all of a sudden everybody's all into it and the card's nuts and everybody's trying to figure out how to deal with it. But in Thunder Junction, we already have a whole pile of cards in just 2 days of previews that everybody's excited about it. You're hearing, seeing all this hype and people are concerned that a card's going to be too good or this is going to change this metagame or whatever. But even that creates sales when the reality is if we take 10 cards and say these are all going to be game changers for metagame, well, that can't be true because something's going to be worse than the other card. Now, some number of them probably will be. I say realistically, probably 4 or 5, right? And then there'll be a bunch of others that are just playable that make their way into decks. But a bunch of those aren't going to be that. But just because they're better statted or they fit a certain theme for Commander or they're hype worthy, that gets people talking and that gets people excited about cards. So as much as people want to be mad about it, and I think this applies to several games, not just Magic, I think you need companies to do that so they can keep the hype machine rolling to sell more cards and keep people interested in the game and keep people talking about it. I mean, we've seen it with other games. Hell, even with Raw Deal, we ended up getting a whole different type of backstage cards or whatever, right? Like that was a whole thing for the pregame. We added a whole separate segment to the game that didn't even exist in the beginning, but it got people excited and talking, right?
Although it did kind of eventually kill the game also.
Well, licensing with WWE officially killed the game.
I remember I had a friend, for example, that, like, you know, he started playing with me in Shreveport, and then as soon as we moved away from each other, he had stopped playing, then came back to it after, let's say, probably 6 or 7 years. And why does it take 10 minutes before the game even starts? Well, because I got to play my pre-match card. They got to play my manager. They can do this. He's like, this, I don't even recognize this game anymore.
But, you know, there's people that say the same thing when they didn't play for a while and they come back and there's Planeswalkers. You know, they're like, also what even is this card? Right? Like, you have to explain to it how it works. Like, wait, so I can attack it? Like, yeah. So, like, I can deal damage? Like, yeah. But then, like, it just stays there? So it's like an enchantment? Well, not really, because it has other abilities. You know, you have to, like, break down all the ways cards interact with it. But people get excited about Planeswalker cards.
Does any other game have anything that really works like a Planeswalker? It's a different mechanic.
I wouldn't say particularly anything else does. Almost everything else that has a Planeswalker type card, it's going to be closer and more akin to a Commander.
Yeah.
Like a character card you have that has some other effects within the game.
The same way all the other character cards work.
Yeah, that's probably going to be the closest thing. A Planeswalker is pretty unique to Magic as far as
it's functioning. Off the top of my head, I can't think of any other card in a game that works that way.
Yeah, I feel like there's been some past card games where there's been, like, locations that have, like, an ability and you can attack them and stuff like that, but still a bit different than a Planeswalker. Yeah,
locations.
Yeah. And Legend of the Five Rings basically had, like, the sites you attack that had some upside or whatever, and that was a thing. But yeah, every game adds something or has something a little bit different. But I also thought about this in just a long term, right? If everything stays the same within a certain space, you do get a little bit bored, right? You're kind of like, well, what's the new thing? Why do I need to buy the new packs? Or, you know, and I get it. Like, I'm one who complains about, I think we have too many keywords in Magic. I like it when we recycle some of those keywords and bring them back up. We don't have to make, like, 2 new ones or 3 new ones for every set. I think that's a bit much.
Well, and I bet they wouldn't, but some of them just come out and die on the vine and, like, party. You know, nobody ever wants to see party again.
Sure. But it's also because we set it up to only work with a handful of cards. And then we don't have a spot to put it in the future, right? Like, party could have been in D&D. You know what I mean? Like, but we didn't get it in that set, which was kind of weird because you literally make a party of things. like, why was that not one of the core mechanics of that set? That was, like, the one opportunity we're going to have to bring it back.
Well, it started in what, I guess, whatever the first D&D set was? And then
it just... it was in one of the Zendikar sets, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think is what it was. Because we had, like, allies and stuff the first time, and I think we got party or whatever the next time. But I think we have to... Now, again, you can have power creep too fast, which I think is a real argument in some games. Like, themes get too big too fast. I think that's real. But we've seen more often than not that games adding stuff that's like, okay, let's boost this power a little bit. Let's give this card another ability. Let's take a cost off of a thing. Let's do this, like... That gets people more excited. Those cards end up being the $10, $15 cards that people want to go buy, as opposed to it just languishing as a middling card in the set being $2 to $5, right? And people go, oh, well, there's no reason for me to buy these, or I don't. Hell, what I have noticed, surprisingly, is it's affected people even wanting to booster draft, which is interesting because they're not often the ones trying to play with these rare cards or whatever, but they want to be able to resell cards that they've drafted with so they can play more drafts, right? Or at least get discounts on other drafts. But when you're opening a bunch of rares that are $2 and $3, well, you have to hope that all of your rares are on the upper end to even get a free draft at some point, right? At least when there's a couple of big cards, you might open a money card and every other, every third draft is free, and that's cool, and the others are just discounted. But you can't even do that if you're opening a bunch of $1 and $2, $3 rares, right? So that's a tough thing that you're encountering. So that makes people less reluctant to want to go to the local store and draft. They're like, well, what's exciting? What cards am I even trying to open? You know, but at the same time, those same players will tell you, well, I don't want rares or mythics that are overpowering the draft or whatever, right? If you open those, right? So it's like this catch 22. Like we said before, right? Players want cards that are cheap, but they really want them to be cheap when they want to acquire them. but they want them to have value when it's time to trade or sell them. And it's hard to have a world where both those things exist. So you're going to have more flashy, bigger cards or whatever over time so you can keep that going and keep it collectible and keep people interested and keep people buying more cards. But I don't know. That aside, I think Thunder Junction's kind of cool. Like, I've looked at the cards they previewed the first couple days, and I'm kind of into it, dude. I don't know how you feel about it, but I actually like the art, the aesthetic. People have some gripes from, like, the story point of how everybody ended up in Thunder Junction. But I don't know. If the cards are cool, I'm in.
Like, yeah, and I don't honestly know how I feel yet because I'm worried about the... Well, I mean, if the cards are good, I guess the thing will sell. I don't know because, you know, we just went here with Hearthstone. So it feels like, okay, this is going to be the second Wild West theme thing I've played in, what was that, 6 or 8 months ago that set came out. So it's a little weird.
Yeah, that is an interesting thing too, right? Like, will it be affected by people being exposed to this genre fairly recently? Right? Because in a way, for Wizards, it's like, okay, we're just going to take a shot in the dark. We're going to do this Western-themed thing, see how it goes. But at the same time, how many players have been exposed to some other Western-themed thing in some other games that they've been playing? Right, whether
also it's, who even, you know, because I, yeah, we're, you know, we're on the older end of the gaming spectrum, so yeah, so we have favorite Western movies. I don't know that any of my children has ever sat through a Western, except maybe Rango, you know, or something like that. But
really, that's interesting. So your kids have never sat through a Western.
They're teenagers. What's the last Western that was even in theaters?
That's what I was about to say. That's going to be the bigger issue. So, yeah, like, what is the most?
It's not hot right now.
Was it like did they do that version of the Magnificent Seven or whatever it was? Was that the most recent one?
It might be, and that's
and even that's like 4 years ago, 5 years ago.
I think longer than that because they've had a sequel to it. So
okay, yeah. So that's the only one I can think of.
Yeah,
I mean, there's probably been something else.
Oh yeah, I'm sure there have been other ones, but they didn't.
I mean, there's also been some that are like set in that time period, but I wouldn't really call them westerns. They're more just like dramas that happen to be kind of set in that space.
Yeah, Tombstone, but, yeah, I guess you could argue, has a Western aesthetic, even though it's set in modern times. But it'd be largely, the story is a story you could easily tell in 1855.
Yeah, Tombstone I would classify as a Western.
Tombstone, but Tombstone's
old.
You know, Yellowstone's what I meant to say.
Oh, Yellowstone, yeah. That's fair. I mean,
it is, you know, basically people fighting over land and honor and stabbing each other. So, yeah, it's basically a Western, but it's set in modern times.
Yeah, that's true. At least as far as TV shows go, that makes sense. Yeah, because Tombstone's like what I would put it like if somebody's not watched Westerns or they're not sure if they're going to like them, I would show them Tombstone first and be like, because if you don't like Tombstone, you're probably not going to like Westerns as a whole.
Yeah,
like that does enough to check all the boxes as far as all the tropes. But then it has some like good one-liners. You get a little bit of a shootout. You got a couple different things in it. Like, all right, cool. So you're not just bored with it being an old style Western. But if you do like old style Westerns, there's enough to keep you interested.
Because I love them, but I don't know how many current Magic players fall into that category.
Yeah, and see, and I think that's the reason even more so that this set needed to have some, we'll call them stronger cards. To keep that interest, right? Because if you're not into that genre, you need a reason to be into it, right? And I get what they tried to do with Karlov Manor, but it, you know, let's put it in Ravnica because we know people like Ravnica, and even if they don't like the murder mystery thing. I think the miss there, though, was it didn't really matter that you were in Ravnica.
Yeah, because you're in one house.
It's
like you take a vacation to New York, but you never left your cousin's house. You didn't really go to New York.
People like Ravnica, though, because of all the guilds and everything else. And those weren't even relevant to the story.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, I've argued before, should have put in a new Capenna. We probably got away with a lot more and been fine. You know, but it is what it is. It'll be interesting to see how people take to the set. But in 2 days, we've seen a lot of really good cards. So this set should have a lot of fun stuff to play with. And a lot of fun stuff to play Commander with, I think, is going to be another big thing. Oh, man, I just realized. I don't know if you can hear it. I'm starting to have a good rainstorm that doesn't happen that often here. Oh, I'm excited.
It must be hitting here because my lights just flickered. So you cut that out.
Yeah, this is cool. Because, like, normally, that's the secret about living in the Pacific Northwest. Like, it drizzles a lot, or there's a little bit of, like, light rain, but there aren't really, like, rainstorms. So you get, like, a couple of those a year, and it's just like, oh, real rain. Awesome. But anyway, let's move into the soapbox and talk about some things. And this one, oh, man. Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. This one's one that I have suspected something for a very long time. And it's that some sellers are racist, or at least have racist tendencies. And I'll explain here in a second. But I want to be clear, like, there's sometimes I buy stuff in Facebook groups. There's stuff I buy long distance that gets mailed, and we do some exchanges that way. There's local stuff I pick up. There's stuff I pick up when I'm traveling to shows, right? I know I'm going to be in town. I look around the local area. I'll just mail stuff back to myself. I make deals all kinds of different ways when I'm buying cards and stuff and collectibles. But occasionally you get somebody who, and I'll find stuff that's posted for a week. Some stuff's been up a couple hours. Some stuff's been up a couple months. And sometimes I'll just reach out because I'm like, hey, I noticed this listing's still up. Are you still trying to sell it? Is it available? You know, maybe I'll offer a lower price because they've been sitting on it for a while, whatever the case might be. But sometimes they respond back quickly with like, no, sorry, it's not available. Or, you know, sorry, already sold it, whatever. And I don't really think about much, you know, just like whatever.
Yeah.
That happens. But then you realize it's still up like a week later. It's like, okay. And I'm even willing to forgive that. Like, because I would think if somebody reminded you about it and you're getting emails about it, you probably go delete it or whatever, take that post down or whatever, because you already sold the thing, right? Especially since a lot of times when you reply to it, it's linked right to it. They can just hit the delete button and get rid of it. Or mark it as sold or whatever the case might be, depending on what you're using. But once or twice, I have seen it come down. You're like, okay, cool. They just forgot to take down the listing. No big deal. But the other times where it's still up later on, I did follow up before. And one was like, oh, no, sorry, I just didn't take it down or whatever. And then they go take it down. But I'm not sure if they really didn't take it down or just like I just remind them about it and they're tired of being annoyed by me or whatever. But then this most recent couple of times it happens, I started really questioning some stuff. So I decided to do an experiment. Reached out to a friend, said, hey, dude, here's a link to a couple of things where I'd reached out to some people for some collections. Like, would you mind responding to one of these? And just don't use the exact same language I did, but just tell them you're interested, want to make a purchase, see how much they want for the collection, whatever. Not only did he get a response, he got a quick response, and they immediately wanted to know, start talking business, threw an offer out to him, whatever. I'm like, okay. So I respond to you. You tell me it's already been sold or it's not available. I check a couple days later, it's still listed. I get one of my friends, and we will say he has no melanin in his skin. He asks and reaches out and immediately gets a response to do business. I don't know how else to classify that. Like, you, I mean, because I think you are so racist, you don't even want to take my money.
Right?
Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's a whole other level.
Once Big Daddy found out, you know, they were buying slaves for $5,000, like, oh, no, wait. Come on in. Have some lemonade. So you are literally more racist than Big Daddy.
Yeah, exactly. So it's one of those things where, like I said, I sort of suspected something didn't feel right a couple of times. And I was like, you know what? Just let it slide. Stuff happens. People forget to delete stuff, whatever. But then when that happens,
our friends that are not of color don't realize how many times we give the benefit of the doubt. We don't want to believe you're racist.
Yeah.
You know, that's not where we don't enjoy getting discriminated against, despite what you hear people thinking like, oh, you know, you're from the left, you're woke, you enjoy being a victim. No, I like it when people just do legitimate business. I love it when people treat me the same as they treat anybody else. But we always try to give you the benefit of the doubt. And then so many times, because like you said, what else is that?
That's my problem, right? Because now I'm just like,
how else do you explain
that? Can't be anything else. You know what I mean? Literally, the only other thing is next time it happens, I'll probably have one of my black friends reach out to see if they get the same response.
Right.
So then, because then if it happens to both of us, and then it doesn't happen to the white, then I'll know for sure. like I said, it's a rough feeling, man. It's a rough feeling. Like, don't get me wrong, I've had a couple of times I've also showed up to buy some stuff, and it felt a little awkward. Like, you could tell there's a little bit of tension, and, like, maybe somebody didn't know, right? But at that point, you're already there with money in hand. Nobody says anything. You just do the transaction and go.
Be taller.
Yeah. So, like, at that point, you just do the transaction and go on about your business. But, yeah, I started thinking, like,
this is another. Before, I've been accused of, you know, sounding white and then invited out to somebody's house or to an event. Like, you're Brian Allen? Mm-hmm. Brian Allen from the Shreveport? Yeah. The one yes.
Yep, same one. One and only.
I'm black. I write about that from time to time, you know?
So yeah, exactly.
Even a little bit of research, you'd have known that.
Yeah, man. It's a crazy thing. I don't, because like you said, like we don't walk around thinking everybody's racist. You go, okay, yeah, somebody just made a mistake, whatever.
Yeah. But somebody could be having a bad day, you know, like you said.
Yeah, of course.
Especially at the beginning, you said somebody maybe just forgot to take a listing down. You're in your head trying to give them every other logical excuse.
It's just tough, man. It's just tough. And that's what I said. Like, now I'm in a spot of just going, how many opportunities have I missed to make money because of this?
Right.
Now, I will say, those situations came up way more when I was in Texas. Like, I can even say, there was a dude, I found two people, actually. It could be more, but I only know of two. That literally went 30 minutes further away to sell cards to a different store that didn't even pay as well as I did because they didn't want to do business. They would come see me whenever we had something on sale or had a crazy deal. But otherwise, they wouldn't want to do business with us. But when it came time to sell stuff or whatever, oh, well, they'll just go to this other place. And it was like, and some people even told them. That's how I found out about it. I was like, dude, I told them, you just take them up to the game closet. Like, you'll get more than these guys are going to give you. Like, oh, I'd rather do business here or whatever. I'm like, okay, cool, whatever.
We are like, no way involved.
Yeah, is what it is, man. And again, could be for another reason. But I'm just saying. Seems kind of bad.
They'd probably be okay if you were just working the counter. But, you know, as the owner, they didn't want to.
Yep. I mean, I've told those stories before. I got a pile of them. You know,
when you became the owner, you became classified as uppity.
Yep. Well, dude, and here's the thing. We're also talking about deals where, like, I'm willing to drive 2 hours, 3 hours mm-hmm. to go complete the deals. We're going to just make a day out of it, right? Go in the morning, go buy the stuff, maybe hang out, do some shopping, eat or whatever, drive home, right? Like, I'm going to them, doing the extra work, spending the gas, and paying for shipping for stuff to be shipped to me or whatever. Still not interested. And I'm like, all right, this is just weird, man. And then now that that's happened, that just opens up another category of things that I was like, you didn't really want to think about it, but now it's there. So now I got to explore this further. So next time it comes up, their situation, we'll talk about it, but we'll see. Anyway, you got something else to talk about.
Yeah, we had a good old-fashioned newsroom revolt over at the NBC networks because they attempted, or I guess not attempted, technically had hired former RNC chairwoman Ronda McDaniel.
I heard about that.
And be, you know, they're obviously their Republican expert. And yeah, I'm okay with people. I want you to hear from both sides. That's what we need. You know, we need to try to get back to where we're not just hopefully attempting to bite each other's heads off, although it's hard because I don't know the last time the two sides have been quite this far apart. We can't even agree on just even who won the election. And after about, I guess, about 24 to 48 hours of basically almost every NBC or MSNBC host saying that she was not welcome on their show, NBC realized they'd be paying this woman, I'm sure, an exorbitant, possibly six-figure salary to not be able to appear on anybody's show. So had to reverse course there. And again, because people think, you know, that People think, I think that everybody in the newspaper is the same, or newspaper, or now website, whatever, is the same ideologically. And no, that is, there is no place I've worked where that's been the case. Many times it's like this, where the owner, the ownership, and the writers have two different points of view because they often come from two different economic classes. The example I always tell you about is when I was writing at the Times, working in the editorial department, I had to write an editorial being opposed to minimum wage increase while getting paid minimum wage.
Yeah, that's not smart.
Because, you know, that's, you know, people just assumed that I was going to, no, at that level of my career, I was basically being told what my opinions on things were.
You know, that chairperson's situation is kind of how I view these people that will talk against a brand. Or, like, we can use Magic as an example. If people want to, like, complain about everything Wizards does, whether it's good or bad, it's never good enough, blah, blah, whatever. And then be like, I don't know why they didn't pick me to be a guest at the show. I don't know why they didn't put me in the ambassador program. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of that same thing. It's like, oh, now there's an opportunity. You go apply for it. And then you're surprised there's backlash or whatever. Right? And we said it before, we're right here on the show. We were just talking about, right? We've complained about some sets because we think they messed up with them, right? But we also talk about the things we like about the other sets that are doing well or whatever. You got to have some balance to it. If all you're doing is attacking somebody all the time, they're not going to want to work with you. Like, and then in this case, for whatever reason, they still were going to give you an opportunity to work with you. And then everybody that works with them was like, nah, son, like, sorry, you've made our life terrible for the last 4 or 5 years. Like, I mean, I'm a believer of it's all right to have some outside opinions. It's okay to have some people who even aren't 100% on board. That's good. Like, you want something.
Ideally,
but,
yes, you want.
But when everything is anti you, like, that doesn't make any sense.
You ideally have, you know, like cross the classic show Crossfire, voice on the left,
yeah,
voice on the right. And hey, if we can ever get a third party to, you know, gain some ground, we need libertarian voices, Green Party voices, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, you got to at least have some connection with reality, you know?
Well, all right, let's get into what did we learn this week? Because, man, there's some things this week. So, yeah, I don't know. Yours is probably going to be a little more surprising for people, but maybe an interesting perspective.
Yeah, as we've mentioned on the show, Overwatch 2 is going through some rough times, and today it just almost felt like this could be the beginning of the end. Because if you asked any, there's a bunch of hero shooters out there right now. Overwatch, X Defiant is kind of being teased. I don't know what's ever coming out, but yeah, there are probably, I don't know, 15 hero shooters that are active right now, but none of them until today featured the actual superheroes that we grew up watching and loving. If you haven't seen the trailer yet, Marvel Rivals is essentially Overwatch, only they made it Spider-Man. So I can just imagine Activision Blizzard probably knew this was in the works because I'm sure they have, you know, huge contacts, but yeah, this is... First, they got the everybody thought of when they saw this, man, Overwatch just really, this is, much as I love Soldier 76 and all the characters, because I talk about Overwatch on this show all the time, I love them, but man, I'd rather be Spider-Man if you give me the choice between those two.
You know, though, I don't even know if it's just Overwatch, because, you know, I've said it before, I've been kind of disillusioned with first-person shooters because, and now again, I'm not super nuanced in every game, but when I play them, they feel very similar, just with like a different skin. Like, do I like a certain story? Do I like a certain feel? But from what you've told me and what we've seen so far in these trailers for this Marvel game, like, it even plays different.
Yeah, I mean, that's when Overwatch first came out, you know, this was revolutionary because, okay, this isn't just we're going to run around and shoot each other. People had essentially superpowers. It almost felt like, you know, Call of Duty and League of Legends had a baby to some extent. And this is kind of what Marvel Rivals looks like, only even to the 10th power. I mentioned to you that I saw more innovation in this 2 to 3 minute trailer than I've seen in the past probably 2 to 3 seasons of Overwatch. There's abilities where people like, you know, Iron Man and Captain America do team up moves, because of course it's a Marvel comic. Everybody got to do a team up move at some point. Of course, Groot and Rocket Raccoon have a team up move where they work together, and it just everything's like, yeah, this is just everything we have wanted from a hero shooter, but with actual superheroes that everybody knows, most people love, and just it's.
But dude, imagine
it's possible
playing like capture the flag, right? And you're like, oh, he's making a run for the flag, and like Hulk just grabs Wolverine and it's like
right?
throws him down an alley to get the guy before he gets the flag or whatever, yeah, right?
That's what we're talking about.
Like that's way more interesting than a lot of these other games. And who knows? Like, begin, because it's superheroes, the door's wide open to do all kinds of things.
And a closed alpha coming in May. One of the things that may hold it back, at least initially, is right now it's only for PC, but I'm sure if it gets the reception that it wants to, it'll eventually hit. How do you make a Marvel superhero shooter game and not put that on the Nintendo Switch? I don't think you can. There's going to be too big an audience to not do that at some point.
That's true. That's one I would at least consider looking at and trying out.
Yeah.
Like, whereas a lot of the others, I kind of just went like, those are probably going to be cool, but I'm not going to make special time to play them.
And part of Marvel/Disney's plan to just wherever you are, whatever TV show you like, whatever kind of movie you like, whatever kind of video game you like, they got something for you. Because they have a property that fits into each one of those categories, and we're seeing where the card game, Slay the Spire type game. They're hitting all the genres and really, for the most part, are doing an incredible job doing it. Midnight Suns, again, I've been preaching it for well over a year now. It didn't sell well, but it's an incredible game. If you even kind of sort of like superheroes, Slay the Spire type stuff or RPGs, please go pick that up. It's probably on PlayStation Plus. I believe it's free now for you to download.
All right, I got an interesting one here. And this study apparently happened a couple years ago, but started resurfacing, probably because of social media. Some people probably shared some stuff on TikTok or whatever. But there was a study done by a couple of scientists in New South Wales in Australia and a group of scientists at the University of Miami, Ohio, I believe. Now, the interesting thing to their conclusion was that men that tend to be worse at games or at the game they're playing are more likely to exhibit habits of toxicity as well as harass women in games more often. And I was like,
least shocking study ever.
Yep. I'm like, that tracks, right? What I like about it is two things. One, it kind of does just line up with what we've experienced, right? Because the good players are just like, whatever, can you follow instructions and do what the team wants to do? Whatever. Yeah. We winning? Cool. I don't give a damn, right? Like, that's kind of it. Is everybody doing their thing?
And the good player knows that the quickest way for a team to lose, even if the players on that team are better, is for a toxicity breakout.
Oh, yeah.
It's easy to be like, well, I'm not going to heal that dude. He just, you know, called me a racial slur or told me to go make him a sandwich or something. I ain't healing him. Why would I?
Exactly. One of the other things, too, that they pointed out was that they believe, or their conclusions were that some of this comes from a lack of emotional development, thinking that losing to a woman is somehow socially debilitating. When in reality, you turn the game off, you walk away, it ain't like anybody's going to know. Like, you know what I mean? Like, unless you're just playing with friends or something. Like if you're just playing in line, it's a bunch of strangers. Who cares, right? It's really irrelevant to the next point of your life.
Way too much of their personality to how good they are at a game. It becomes their entire identity.
That's fair. That's a thing we know is way too common in too many games. You know, but I thought it was interesting because now, if somebody wanted to, I mean, they're kind of could just point out a link to the article that the person just telling on themselves now, right? Like, you start giving a woman crap just because she's in the game or like she killed you or whatever, she can just link you to the article and be like, well, you must not have been that good anyway, right? Or whatever. Right. Like, the study says there's a real percentage chance that you are just not as good as you think you are, carrying all that negativity around to other players.
Also going to be the person that's most likely to make a racial slur, most likely to blame anybody else on the team for being the reason they lost.
Of course.
When you can pull up their stats and they missed as many or more shots than anybody or weren't on there, just whatever needs to be. Because in almost any game, people giving tips will tell you, especially a team-based game, having a plan, especially the lower ranks, having any kind of a plan and executing it is better than running around like the proverbial chicken.
Oh, yeah, just being organized on any level.
Just Star-Lord, even 25% of a plan is often enough to win the game.
Yeah, if your enemy's got no plan, hey, why not? So, yeah, I just thought that was interesting. I don't know why it just started coming up recently, but it's one that I went, yeah, that checks out with everything I know.
Yeah, it's one of those we probably need to come back to periodically, because every day we see some ridiculous story or some exaggerated case of guys being terrible to women.
What's even funnier is you can almost just point to people and be like, hey, if you want to not be looked at as a worse player, try being nicer to people. Right. Right? Like, and that just becomes a good habit anyway, like just in life.
Even gamers, you know, that later are proven to be trash human beings, but it's being racist, sexist, what have you, in between the lines, as they would say, when they're actually doing what they do to earn money, treat everybody equally. They may get offline and call them everything but a child of God, but when the game is on the line, they are usually less toxic. That's not 100%. There's, you know, for every example, there's, you know, there's a PewDiePie out there.
Also fair. All right, let's get into some topics. We're going to have to hit these pretty quick because we got a lot to cover. This first one, I don't know, man. I feel like this is becoming at least like an every 8 or 9 month thing, but I have another artist that basically stole somebody else's artwork. In this case, the artist was Faye Dalton. He did the artwork for Trouble in Pairs, which is a newer card from one of the last couple of sets. And it's already dumb to copy somebody's artwork. Not a smart move. Even worse, we're going to be working with one of the big companies. Because, one, that's a lot of future earnings that you may be screwing up. But even worse, in this case, stole artwork from another Magic artist that is known for doing Magic and has a huge following in the Magic community. So it's like, you took artwork from Donata Giancola, tried to do enough on it to say I didn't completely copy your homework, put it into your piece, and thought it was just going to go unnoticed. Yeah, not cool. And here's the weird part to me. They did just enough to try to, like, I'll adjust the arm position or whatever, holding the weapon, and, you know. But still, like, in the original artwork, it was done for a cyberpunk-style piece. So there's almost like a glow or electric kind of thing to the doorway next to the person. But in the new piece, you still kept a doorway behind it and just kind of changed the type of frame it is. And then in the old piece, there's a stairway behind it. And the new piece kept the stairway behind it. I'm like, you could have just got rid of these other things and just kept the character and still pulled off what you need. But you just, I don't know, like, you did enough to try to change it, and you didn't do anything at all at the same time.
I don't know how anybody in this age of the internet, where you can just instantly Google somebody else's image or anything else you want to know, that anybody thinks they'll get away with stealing art. Yeah, 15, 20 years ago, sure. Even in the early days of the internet, we'd have had to probably get on a IRC forum and compare notes, and it would have taken, you'd have already been to the bank, gotten your check, and gotten away with it. But nowadays, it is far too easy to do just the tiniest bit of research in seconds.
Yeah, I just don't get it. And again, it's work for, really at this point, probably the biggest buyer of artwork in the gaming and fantasy industry.
Yeah.
Right? So that's kind of silly. Because, again, you're costing yourself future jobs, future artwork, whatever, opportunities. But you also are going to be putting it in front of one of the largest audiences. So if somebody's going to see it, you're putting increased number of eyeballs on this work you stole.
233 episodes. How many times have we done this story already?
Oh, there's been several where this come up.
It seems like this is at least the 10th or 12th time
we've had. I don't know if it's quite that many, but it's a lot.
It seems like way more than you think for how, or I guess, I think I'm probably thinking about other problematic artists.
Well, we've had a lot of artist problems, yes. Yeah. That is definitely a thing. Like,
You're Noah Bradley, yep, and Therese Nielsen. That probably takes us to 10 or 12, just in general, stories about problematic artists.
Yeah, and again, it's just like you took artwork from somebody who's well, not just well-known in the art community, well-known particularly in the magic community, to use their artwork for a magic card. Like you chose one of the worst possible situations in people to even copy something from. That's what's even crazier. So, yeah. Now, I haven't done the follow-up to see what Wizard's response is, but if it's like the others, they're probably going to say, hey, one, we're investigating it, and two, probably cutting off work with this person till future notice. And it's just like, man, how is...
And that future notice ain't ever going to come.
Yeah.
There are too many artists to work with that don't steal people's art for you to ever get a shot again.
It's just so tough because I'm just like, how did you think this was going to go?
There, you know, as we talk about on here, every week we see or hear somebody doing something terrible, but you know, 2 weeks later, their career has recovered. If their career ever took, there are but a handful of things you can't do. and never work again. And for an artist or any kind of creative, plagiarism is one of them.
That's true.
That's the thing that just...
Or you'll get a bunch of smaller jobs. You won't get the big high-profile jobs anymore.
Yeah.
You know, that's the tough part. But like I said, I'm just like, you could have... I mean, you have technology. You could have changed the proportions of the body. You know, maybe given the character bigger arms or a larger head or, you know, whatever. But I saw a laid-over image... And it's pretty damn close, except for where they changed the elbow position or whatever. Like, it's the same thing. They changed the hairstyle and stuff, but like, dude, why? You know? And I get it. You might have been pressed for time or whatever, but it ain't worth doing that and costing your... Like, you talk about fumbling the bag. You know what I mean? Like, if you do good work and people, especially if people are fanning your card and everything else, and you're getting invited to shows, like... Opportunities are endless. You get to go to all these other different tournaments, conventions, whatever, sell all this prints and playmats, and yeah, just sad to see it go down that way. But all right, there's also another story, and this one's a couple weeks old, but we kind of had to pass it on to this week. But Post Malone and Lil Wayne, trouble with the IRS. And we only bring it up because Post Malone's obviously been on a lot of different magic content, you know, obviously bought the One Ring. He's been at a bunch of people's commander stuff. But yeah, supposedly, according to the story, their companies got some of the, I guess, support money during COVID or whatever. And part of the thing was they were supposed to have supposedly drug-free work environments. And now there's claims that they don't have that or didn't have that at the time. So they're supposed to pay back these loans or notes or whatever. And I guess they didn't.
Lil Wayne... Didn't have that little. You go disperse. I'm just shocked. The Lil Wayne didn't have a drug free work environment. I mean,
Lil Wayne. Hell, he was on the syrup for a while. Right?
I'm not saying it's right, but I almost feel like if you, as any entity that loans or grants money, gave Lil Wayne money with the condition that there not be any drugs involved. It's all, come on, man. It just feels like this is almost on you. It feels true.
Now, from what I could read through, which is probably why this is going to be a little bit of a drawn out case, I couldn't find anything that said there was a reason there was proof of the thing other than people.
As you said, Lil Wayne has an obvious
documented. But I'm saying, but even in the case of like Post Malone, there wasn't like, oh, well, we found out these people were doing drugs at work or there was no drug testing policy or whatever. At least not yet.
Yeah, we haven't seen it, but I'm sure if the federal government is going in, there's documentation.
So it'll be interesting. It was mostly reported based on them as owners, I guess, of these companies. But we'll see.
the federal government doesn't get defeated too often in courts.
Oh, sure. Now, I will say, what's the outcome most likely? Probably just going to pay some fines or whatever money they're due and whatever. Everybody's probably going to go on about their business. It's going to be how much do you have to pay.
And also, we brought it up because, you know, the whole, I forget how many, let's say maybe about a year ago, we talked about why Post Malone was out front and center and doing promotional stuff for Magic. And then said, hey, whatever happened to, you know, Project Greenlight, where we were supposed to be giving money to up-and-coming creators, and it sounds like apparently what just happened is Project Greenlight got given to Mr. Beast and Post Malone, and we even argued on here that, let's be perfectly honest, Post Malone is going to put, or Mr. Beast would put more eyes on your product than what Daquan or I would put on your product.
Absolutely.
But
not even close.
But by the same token, neither I or Daquan would have gotten in trouble for not having a drug-free workplace. So it's
when you
deal with celebrities, you kind of pay your money and you take your chances.
Yeah, that's kind of what's always going to be a thing, you know. And we've seen it over the years with all kinds of brands. Like you can't control individuals once they're not under contract or doing the thing with you. So whatever happens, happens.
This is what insurance companies do before they give people money. Again, Lil Wayne.
You
gave Lil Wayne some money with the condition that it was a drug-free. Come on!
We've heard of a lot of companies that got some COVID money, and there's all kinds of things involved. So this does not surprise me. I will at least say that. You shouldn't have given it to him, but I'm not shocked that he got it.
Well, also true.
You know, there was a lot going on at that time. But yeah, crazy situation. I don't know how it's going to affect anything. Like I said, I expect this will be one of those cases. It's going to drag out for probably like 6-7 months. They'll do all their research.
The thing for Magic is that, you know, if this goes on, well, I mean, it's Post Malone, Lil Wayne. It's going to keep getting attention. And at some point, they're going to write the story that does the big list of all the rich a-hole things that these people bought with the money. And they're going to mention the one ring because it's most obvious. Oh, this guy paid $2 million for a piece of cardboard, because if you know nothing about Magic, you have no idea why a piece of cardboard could be worth $2 million. Those of us that play obviously know that you could argue it in 10 years could be worth 3 or 4 times that, but the average person writing that story doesn't know that. They don't have that background.
Yeah, I mean, there's also the, like, does it just put eyeballs on you anyway? Right? Like, does anybody care other than people discover that Magic cards can be $2 million? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I don't know how people are going to view this.
It's often said that there's no such thing as bad publicity, and celebrities test that on an almost daily basis.
That's also true. Yeah, it'd be interesting. I think this is probably one of those things that's just going to get settled at some point.
Yeah,
they'll just figure out what the number's going to be, and they'll just pay it. I mean, hell, he's still, and since then, has been doing multiple tours and everything else, making piles of money anyway, both of them. So it's not like it even matters. All right, so I'm sure some people have heard about this thing that Elon Musk, and I don't know which arm of his company was supposed to be putting this together, but the thing they were calling Neuralink, which basically the idea is we will jack a thing into your brain and you can use your brain to control things, like operate technology, you know, whatever. Well, we actually have the first person, and I believe it's the first person, who's had the Neuralink brain implant, I guess we'll call it, inserted. And I saw a thing of him using it to play a game of chess. Like, you know, click the options, move the piece on the board, pass the turn, you know, whatever. Supposedly, and this is amusing to me, that the first real game he decided to play was Civilization VI and stayed up all night playing it, which is awesome.
Yeah, if you probably asked me, what you give a nerd a neural link, what's one of the Civilization probably be top 5 guesses.
Yeah, and the thing is, I thought about it, because this person is a quadriplegic, so minimal, if any, feeling on extremities from the neck down. And playing a game like that, you do have to do a lot of, like, shifting the map, clicking buttons so you can see what everybody else is building, where you want to put stuff, you know, setting up jobs to be worked on. There's a bunch of stuff going
on.
By
the late game, you're doing probably easily 25, 30 actions a turn and responding to other people's actions. And yeah, I can imagine.
Well, and then there's in-story stuff, right? Diplomacy things like, do you want to help us do whatever? Do you want to attack this person, right?
I think so you got to click even on has climate change. I mean, it's gotten extremely complex.
But the cool part about that is he was able to play all that just from looking at the screen.
That's both exciting and scary to be at the same time. Isn't it?
Because I was thinking about, like, because we talked about this off the show, right? For somebody in that situation, it makes total sense to go for it, right? Because you're talking about completely changing this man's quality of life, right? He can do so much more just being able to access things and operate things and whatever that you just couldn't before. And that's huge. For me as an able-bodied person, I'm probably not going to do it until we reach a point that, like, one, you know, all the safety features and protocols are in place, but two, that you can show me, okay, does this benefit open up way more doors for me? Like, as an example, if I'm worried about my phone listening to me talk or whatever, I also get all these other benefits of having the phone. So it's like, whatever, I'll put up with it. If it's a thing, it's a thing, right? But right now, there's not enough things that I could do with the Neuralink thing, whatever. Now, if you could put a little thing in my finger, and maybe I can speed up using things at the bank or, you know, whatever. Like, I might do some for convenience purposes, if you can do that without having to jack into my brain and my whole, like, neural system or whatever. Like, I might be down for a little bit of something.
Even putting your finger, they've had to, at that point, enter your neural system.
Well, I mean, if it's a little chip that just, like, you know, like you have in your pets where you scan stuff or whatever, like, that can just be there. I'm okay with that. But until when we start doing the more invasive things, the benefit's got to be higher. But it's cool that, I mean,
think about how many times you see somebody go in for just minor surgery and come out dead.
Yeah, I feel
Chris Candido, I think, had a broken ankle and ended up dead.
It can happen for sure. But what I started thinking about, though, is what if this works and this becomes a thing and we get 4, 5, 6 patients where it's all successful? Like, what are the opportunities there? Right. Like, what can you control? Like, where do we advance beyond that? Like, you know, we talked off the air about, like, do you start getting other robotic parts and robotic eyes and whatever? And, like, what does that lead to of the things you could do?
Do we just see the bionic man possibly be the $6 million man and bionic woman possibly become reality?
Yeah. Do we start living like androids or worse yet, like RoboCop or something? I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, there's some crazy stuff, but the technology is here and it works. Like, we have an example of somebody using it now and it's crazy.
Because I remember Mark Wahlberg has been trying to get the $6 million man option, and they're wondering, first of all, does anybody still care? But with stuff like this, it's become far more relevant even than it was. But because, I mean, in the 70s, it was total sci-fi. We weren't even close, but apparently we're here now. You know?
The
$6 million man is a reality.
I don't know if I mentioned it before, but I've already seen people with prosthetic parts that are all electronic. Like, they move like joints and everything else, and they charge their leg and everything else. Like, it's a real thing. So we're not far from it. Like, these things can exist, which is pretty cool.
They'll also have to change the price point because $6 million is nothing.
Well, yeah, ain't nothing anymore. Yeah, that's also true.
You'd have to, at minimum, I guess, be the $6 billion man.
Probably at that level. But getting into the dinner table, and this one's kind of interesting, and I saw this conversation started online, of what do we think is either the biggest innovation that has made tournaments, events, conventions better, or is there something we think that should exist that doesn't? I'm willing to go first on this one because...
Yeah, because I was about to say, you've seen far more tournaments
than there. There was a thing that, fortunately, I got to be part of that I think really made events better, and it's Wizards Companion App. And I think one of the issues we always had was, like, judges always having to chase people around every round, and, like, you have to post these things all over the room, and we came up with different technology over the years of people using actual video screens, and then, like, people made special programs so you could scroll the pairings. And, you know, we came up with all these different things to try to work through events for a while. But now you can have it on your phone. It's in your pocket, right? Like, you can get a buzz when the next round pairings are up. right? If you want to look at standings, you don't have to like stand around the board and compare notes. Can you draw in or not, right? You just look at your phone and figure it out. That, to me, really changed events as a whole. It just became a whole level of convenience. Hell, even being able to report your matches just from your phone. Right. Like, you report, it shows up on the other opponent's phone, and they can confirm, and you're done. Right? That's it. You don't have to do hardly anything for it. It's such a cool thing of just changing all those lanes you had to deal with and the crowds looking at pairings, having to go out, especially in bad weather days or when it's cold, you're just having to go outside and get the people having a smoke or whatever to get them back in for the next round. Like, a lot of that has changed, and it's, like, so good. There's still a few things they're working on that they're updating over time, but so far, just using that has been so much better. And I hope as we get to bigger events, it still scales well and has no issues. So far, it seems to be fine. You can still use it. But I hope it continues to still scale up so we can use it for everything. Because, man, it adds a whole level of convenience that didn't exist before. But I don't know, man. Do you have anything you've seen that's changed or something that you want to be at events that isn't?
I mean, yeah, and it isn't even an event. Well, I remember, like, some of my mentors in journalism and other things saying, you know, just refer that crawl kind of before you walk. So, yes, in it, like, the companion app is a beautiful thing. It needed to happen. I'd just like to see, like, we literally just talked about them having a tournament next to the main stage while fashion shows and live events are happening. So just, first of all, let's figure out how to never do that again. It's like, that is a thing that I don't want that to get brushed over in as we seek whatever the next, because absolutely keep working on new things, but don't forget the basic things. Like, when that's getting put together, you just feel like somebody you would hope would have looked at that and been like, wait, where is the tournament? and where is the cosplay? Because, you know, the cosplay thing especially is gonna get loud, because, you know, fashion shows are loud, and it's essentially a fashion show. Loud. Not necessarily cameras are flashing, but people's cell phones are flashing, taking pictures. So yeah,
and that's one of those things, like I said, is like, it's to the point that I would love for that to change. I just don't know why it has. I mean, I guess I know why it hasn't, because people don't pay for a whole extra room.
Yeah.
And extra, you know, people and traffic and whatever to run an event.
Yeah, we know why. I guess the question now is just, because I know we've talked about it. I remember, like, obviously it was a huge thing on Magic social media for several days. Has Wizards responded to any of those questions?
I don't think so. And I don't even know what their response would be, other than, like, we're aware there were problems, you know?
And then you explain if you're going to fix the problems. I guess if you don't plan to fix the problem, then your best PR move is to say nothing.
Yeah, exactly. But, and that's what I'm saying. I don't expect any changes. Even though we would like for there to be changes, I don't expect there to be any. And
that's really unfortunate.
Like I said, I've been going to conventions at this point for, I don't know, 25 plus years. Same thing at every event, and it's why I don't play any major events.
I don't remember there ever being, like, because, again, you know, I used to play in Magic tournaments on a somewhat regular basis, and I've never had a fashion show going on next to me.
Number of times I've played events, this goes all the way back to even when Legend of the Five Rings was a thing. They had a whole thing where they would shout, like, Bunzai and all these other, like, crazy things, like, during their events, and, like, you just hear it echoing through halls and stuff where you're trying to play stuff in the next section right next to them. And it's just like, all right. Like,
but that's part of the game. That's an in-game thing.
No, that's just a thing they did. It was like extra. Like, they just did it. Like, that's the weird part. But it's just like, there's always been that thing. It's just, you put way too many games in one hall, so they're all making noise and the volume's really high. And it's just like, I get why they do it. It's a cost thing. You want to have everything in the same room. It creates excitement, whatever. But I think it's just a bad environment for high.
And that's absolutely a horrible environment.
Yeah, for high value, high prize events, I don't think that's a good environment.
No, it's a terrible environment. I don't know who could defend that as an environment. I understand why we know the solution, or not the solution, but the reason is to keep cost. We get that, but it's still a horrible thing. Imagine playing for, you know, your share of $75,000 and you can't even hear what's going on.
I played Nationals one year in the middle of one of those big rooms at Gen Con. And it was just constant. You had people walking by and, you know, you're trying to go put pairings up and, you know, there's noise constantly. It's just like, it's probably, honestly, that might be the last big event. And it's because I qualified and I just played. Yeah. But I don't think I've paid an entry to play a high value event since then.
And again, it's because there's been a huge paradigm shift, not just at Wizards, but a lot of places in terms of casual play versus pro play. The fashion show is for the casual player, yeah, or even the person that just likes to watch cosplay. They may never pick up a Magic card, but they enjoy seeing people dressed up as their favorite character. And we are in an era when people who don't ever plan to play the game still have a favorite Magic character.
Yep.
That's a thing I'm sure they probably never envisioned, you know, when they started this game many, many years ago.
Now, to be fair, the Pro Tour got its own separate section. Like, yeah, it was still accessible, but it was blocked off from the majority of the noise and the traffic. And it's like, so it's that mid-level competitive stuff that kind of gets caught in that
void. Wait, is 75,000 considered mid-level?
Outside, compared to the Pro Tour, you know, like, that's just an event at a convention. Pro Tour is part of a whole promotional machine with hundreds of thousands of dollars available and whatever, so they get their own space and their own treatment. That's just the way it is. Not saying it's right, just saying that's the way it's been. But yeah, I'm with you. It's something that definitely should change, and I'd be nice to see it change. I guess call me jaded. But having seen it for 20 plus years, 25 plus years, I'm just like, it's not going to change at this point. Like, I just can't imagine that it will. I'm with you. I would love for it to, and it'd be awesome if it did. Every time we saw an event that had more than, I don't know, $10,000 worth of prizes, maybe gets its private special, I don't want to say special space, but at least a more blocked off secluded space, so it's not in the middle of all the noise, would be awesome. I just don't know who's going to be the first one to make that happen, if it hasn't happened yet. But I'm with you. I think that's a good one. If anybody's listening, hey, probably something you should do. Or just don't do those large level events at the conventions, I think is the other solution, if you're not going to make for special space. But we'll see how it ends up. But anyway, Brian, tell everybody where they can find you on social media.
All right, I am Brian Sonic on Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram.
And you can find me everywhere at Power Dragon, PowerDragon. And most of the next week, we'll probably be doing lots of Thunder Junction stuff. And you might even see me in a cowboy hat in the next couple weeks. Just saying. But as always, wherever you are listening or watching, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. Please remember to take care of yourselves and your family. Remember to be awesome. And most importantly, be awesome to each other. If you'd like to further support Color of Magic, you can find us on our website at colorofmtg.com. We also have a Patreon if you'd like to donate, other patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook under Color of Magic. And if you want to follow us along at Twitter, you can find us there at colorofmtg. And as always, please share the podcast around to your friends, your network, people you think might enjoy it, because every little bit helps as we're trying to increase our user base.